Acorns are dropping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 95, Walnut and Indigo. Tuesday, October 27th, 2015. I'm your host, Sarah. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. The Yarns at Yin Hu podcast has a Facebook page, and it's available on iTunes. This week's episode includes the following segments: the front porch, the back porch, off the shelf, ever-expanding skill set, and sheep to shawl. I'd like to welcome new listeners, my sister's knitter, Andy from Arizona, and stitch mistress, Sharon from New York. Thank you for introducing yourselves on the welcome thread. And welcome to all new listeners to the show, whether you say hello with social media or not. I really appreciate the listenership and the support and the kind words that I hear about the podcast. It's very gratifying and keeps me going. Prizes from the PrizeCast episode have been mailed or are en route. If you contacted me about a prize you expect to receive, you should have received it already or will be getting it over the next few days. The front porch. I have quite a few projects on the needles, the newest of which is the brioche hat by Pearl Soho. This pattern contains both a hat and a cowl pattern, and I began this project as well as learned to knit the brioche stitch on Friday evening with Mary Beth while we were in this really funky, eclectic apartment in the center of Rosendale, New York. The decor in this apartment defies description. It was just an endless amount of discovery. I think you could stay there a week and still be discovering new nooks and crannies and interesting vintage items that the owners have collected over the years. So it was a lot of fun. We sat while we were learning to knit brioche. Mary Beth bought the pattern and she brought some yarn from her stash and we had the needles. And there was this interesting, very low to the ground courting chair where one person sits facing one direction and the other person sits facing the opposite direction. So it's very nice for conversation to see each other. But it was in this really bizarre beige upholstery and just so low to the ground. It felt like you were sitting on a footstool. We had a blast doing that. I have not knit very much on this project because some other things have been on my agenda since I returned, but I really like the density of this brioche stitch. I'm excited to have the skill of knitting brioche so that I can transfer it to perhaps some future projects. And I'm eager to begin the decreases, even though I have a long way to go before I'm ready to do the decreases. But Mary Beth said, the decreases I heard are magical. And she is probably done with her hat. I haven't seen a photograph of it yet, but I imagine she got quite a bit of knitting done on the way back to Pittsburgh. And that she has completed it. I will make slower progress on my hat. Nevertheless, it is a very nice project, and with photo tutorials, as most of Pearl Soho's projects have, that make learning the knit stitch in brioche pretty easy in digestible chunks. This is the brioche hat, and it's from a pattern called the Brioche Hat and Cowl by Pearl Soho. It is available free through their website, and you can reach that through Ravelry. On the back porch is Hallowig, a free pattern from Knitty by Megan Reardon. This is a pattern for a knit wig, and you use 2x2 rib stitching to imitate the look of hair, or to imitate the natural look of fake hair, I guess would be an appropriate way to put it. It's best knitting this pattern with acrylic yarn because it holds its structure better than yarns with natural fibers. I just happen to have some acrylic yarn. It's sometimes helpful to have some on hand for different projects or for teaching knitting, in a very vibrant pink. This project took exactly one skein of Lion Brand yarn. I think it's the Vanna's Choice yarn in pink. And I'm pretty pleased with how it turned out. I don't know how excited you can get about a knit wig, but I think I will wear it. I would like to block it a little bit so that it sits a bit more comfortably on the head. The whole thing is seamed across the top, and it wants to pucker up a little bit so you can see a seam from front to back of your head. But I think by getting it wet and maybe stretching it over my hat form, I will be able to stretch it out a little bit and make it look a little bit less pointy. So I think this will be my costume for Halloween. And I do recommend this pattern. I think especially for children, it could be fun. And they can wear it just like a hat. So it's very comfortable and maybe a little easier to wear than a wig. Once again, this is the Hallowig, a free knitty pattern by Megan Reardon. Off the shelf. I came home from Rhinebeck with quite a few books that will be gifts for family members, but also a little reading material of my own, including Knitlandia by Clara Parks. And in future episodes, I hope to read an excerpt or two. I have linked to this book in the show notes for this podcast on yarns@yinhu.com. And I'm spending a bit of time each evening reading these essays. They're sort of travel essays. I mean, they have to do with the topic of yarn and fiber, but they take place in such a vast range of locations over a long span of time that it really does have the flair of travel writing. The book comes out in November, I believe, and I will be sharing a bit of it with you in upcoming episodes. That's Knitlandia by Clara Parks. I'm also browsing through Pom Pom issue 15, Pom Pom quarterly issue 15, the most recent issue of the magazine. And I mentioned in the previous episode that I was very attracted to the suffragette pattern. This is by Olga Baraya Kafelian. It's a pattern for just such a charming knit cloche, knit in sport weight yarn with, I don't know, some garter bands or some sort of band detailing, as well as a little bit of a split in the brim of the hat, which enables the wearer to fashion it in different ways. So I think it looks more jaunty if you wear it with one portion of the border in the front and then maybe more polished and sophisticated with the hat turned a bit so that you know, the different features show in the front, back, and sides of the hat. I don't know when I will have the time to cast this on, but it really is such an attractive pattern. And with the suffragette film coming out soon, or maybe it's already in theaters, I would like to get started on it. So we'll have to see how that goes. I did purchase some yarn for the hat, and I think I also have some additional yarn choices in my stash. I suppose the next hurdle will be deciding what yarn to choose for the project. Ever expanding skill set. This month, I have been aiming to cook with produce that's traditionally stored in a cellar or cool storage. One, I made a savory pudding with quite a bit of leftover food. So I had a leftover half onion. I had some apples that had dropped in my mom's orchard. So they've been stored in the refrigerator and need to be used quite rapidly. They're not incredibly high quality apples. They have a lot of spots. They haven't been treated or, you know, well maintained, but we just glean as many apples as we can from the orchard. So I wanted to use those. I had some chicken sausage and I had quite a few leftover baguette slices. So I combined all of these things into a savory pudding, and then to give it a nice texture and that comfort food quality, I made a cheese sauce. So I started with a roux of flour and butter, and then I added some milk and a bit of half and half. I brought that up to a boil very quickly and then back down to a simmer, and then added bits of, I don't know, 3 or 4 leftover cheeses. We were dealing with a lot of leftover items from entertaining. And sometimes they can be unappealing to eat on their own, but if you can reinvent those leftovers into another dish, it's very satisfying and also very economical. So the cream sauce was really rich and tangy. I always add a bit of nutmeg to my cream sauce, and then I put that over the top of diced apples, diced and sauteed onions, cut up pieces of a chicken sausage. It was a sweet Italian version of a chicken sausage. And then the other thing was one big bunch of sauteed Swiss chard. Then I cubed all of the leftover pieces of baguette and I tossed them all together with that cheese sauce and baked it into the oven. Since this dish would be baking in the oven, I didn't saute all of the ingredients as thoroughly as I might if I were serving them right from the stovetop. I left them, I guess you could say, al dente or just partially cooked, so that they would finish their cooking in the oven and not be too mushy. This whole thing came together in this like warm, cheesy, bitter and sweet, because you had the bitter of the greens and the sweetness of the apples and the sauteed onions. Just a really satisfying fall dish. So it's a nice way, I think a savory pudding is a nice way to sort of riff on different vegetables and also to use leftovers in a completely new way that no one would recognize them as leftovers. They're reinvented in this dish. Some upcoming dishes this weekend. I will be making an old favorite for Halloween and trying a new recipe. I've linked to both of these on the website. The first is an old favorite, sweet potato soup. And I do a take on a recipe called Sometimes You Feel Like a Nut, Sometimes You Don't Soup. I initially found it on the Food Network website. It's for a sweet potato soup, a creamy sweet potato soup. And instead of using half and half or heavy cream, you use coconut milk. And then, just for a little extra flair around Halloween, I grate a frozen Mounds bar over the top of the soup as a garnish. It's absolutely delicious. And over the years, I have made this soup with butternut squash instead of sweet potato. I've also added apples. I've added roasted cauliflower to this soup. There are quite a few ways that you can do it. And I think the original recipe has sort of a higher fat and a lower fat version of the soup. The other recipe, a new one to me that I will be trying, is Moroccan roasted beets with pomegranate and pistachio. I love roasted beets. I have some from the farmer's market. Pomegranates are in season, and I love cooking with fruit and nuts in a savory dish. That just hits all of the high notes for me. And it's so satisfying at this time of year. So at some point this week, I will be trying that dish. I think that this is something that would stand alone as an entree. So it might be a good opportunity for a meatless meal. It might also be a good recipe alongside a rice pilaf or some other sort of grain. Once again, that's Sometimes You Feel Like a Nut, Sometimes You Don't, sweet potato soup, and Moroccan roasted beets with pomegranate and pistachio. I hope you're enjoying cooking with fall produce and just the bounty of fruits and vegetables that are available at market this time of year. Looking ahead to the month of November for hashtag Power Pantry, we will be talking all month long about the baking pantry, and I do hope to entice my mom to host a special episode of Yarns at Yinhu podcast with me. So my plan is that we will be co-hosts for a piecast episode. In preparation for the piecast, I need Yarns at Yinhu listeners to submit their questions about pies and pie baking. This will be an important enticement to my mom, who can sometimes be a little bit reluctant about coming on to the show with me. But she is just such an amazing baker of pies and has such a wealth of knowledge to share that I think if she hears the questions, she will be intrigued and want to talk at length from her wealth of knowledge. So Yarns at Yinhu listeners, I am counting on you. What are your questions about pies and pie baking? I will open a thread on the Ravelry board so you can post there. But I know that many Yarns at Yinhu listeners are not members of Ravelry and not necessarily knitters. So if you fit that description, please contact me via a message on Facebook or a reply to this episode's post. You can also use the comment feature on the show's blog on yarnsatyinhu.com to pose a question as well. I will compile all of these, and my plan is to record this podcast rather early in November so that you have your answers and you have some great tips and information well in advance of the Thanksgiving baking season. Sheep to Shawl. This past Saturday, I traveled to the Fibercraft studio For a day-long session of my Sheep to Shawl course, the focus was on some walnut and indigo dyeing, as well as some discussion about design and use of color for our upcoming garment or accessory. It was quite a busy day. We learned about methods for using powdered indigo, which yields a much more potent blue than the Japanese indigo and the woad that we were using. In this case, we were freshening up dye pots that had been used to dye the yarn for Rhinebeck. So we learned how to make the color of an existing pot more vibrant and what steps you would take and when. And some folks were using this as an opportunity to over dye some of their yarn. I didn't have any yarn that hadn't been dyed, so I took the opportunity to over dye some yarn that I had previously dyed in avocado seeds and skin. It wasn't a very vibrant or interesting color, so I thought that would be a good opportunity to come up with something a little richer and more interesting. And that did yield a much deeper, bolder blue. We also spent time dyeing with walnuts. I've heard about dyeing with walnuts for many, many years. In fact, I know that my father dyed fabrics with walnuts, but I guess we didn't get into that with him because it is very messy. It stains, and I suppose that it would be particularly troublesome with children getting their hands into all of that. Nevertheless, I was astounded that I've gone on for years and years with a major misconception about dyeing with black walnuts. I always thought that you needed to remove the hull of the walnut and use the nut. And that's not true. You remove the nut and use the hull. This awareness just washed over me. I don't know. I just felt like when you miss that day in school and everyone seems to know something that you don't, it was just bizarre. But we had some good fun outside the Fibercraft studio in the brisk afternoon air, just pounding dropped walnuts between two stones and removing the hull. And those went into large sacks, which we then covered with very warm water and brought up to a simmer. No mordant process is needed with fiber that's going to be dyed with walnuts. So we were able to put yarn and fiber into the pot. And in this case, many folks were putting the majority of their yarn that they had dyed so far into the pot. The reason for that is that this workshop time had been preceded by a discussion of how to deal with the disparate colors that we were going to use to knit one garment or accessory. And some folks, although they were very pleased with the striking colors we had come up with so far, they felt like they didn't work well in a single piece. And so one way to deal with that frustration is to put everything for a very short time into some black walnut dye and then pull it out right away, see if you like the effect, and just continue to put it into the dye and take it out until you have achieved the desired effect. And what that will do is just sort of even out the color variety and make colors that didn't seem to go together coordinate much more readily. I was tempted to do this with my yarn because the weekend prior I had washed all of the yarn and just put it through another rinse. Some I had rinsed after spinning, some I had rinsed after dyeing. I hadn't kept track of things very well. So it was a beautiful sunny weekend, the weekend before Rhinebeck, and I just washed everything in some soak, just a teeny little bit in some nice warm water. And then I gave it a good rinse and a giant bath of warm water and vinegar. And I let that all dry in the lovely sunshine. And then I could see more clearly what I was dealing with in terms of my colors. My plan is to knit with the colors as I have them. And if I think there is still too much disparity in the finished object, I might take the garment into a walnut dye bath and see if I can even out the colors a little bit by dyeing the garment instead of the yarn. One reason I'm doing that is that I'm not completely sure I am going to use all of the yarn that I dyed. And if I have a nice vibrant color and I don't use all the yarn, I really want to be able to save that vibrant color and maybe use it for something else later. In terms of design and thinking about how to use colors, we took a very close look at some writings about Rudolf Steiner's teachings in this regard. And Rudolf Steiner is the father of the Waldorf method of education. He has a lot to say about education, but also about the nature of craft. So we've been reading some works by others that comment about his teachings. And I'd like to share with you in particular this section that reveals some of his thoughts about dresses and dressmaking. We started with a bit of conversation about costume. And I gradually learned to shift my understanding of the term costume. I've always associated it with Halloween costumes and presenting a look to the public that is really not consistent with your own identity, but is a kind of play or dress up or taking on a different identity. When Steiner's talking about costume, he's talking about traditional dress or national costume, where the clothing is used to convey part of a person's very specific identity. I thought that was very interesting, and it's shifting my perspective on what it means to make clothing and what we are communicating with others in the choices and the patterns and the colors that we select. So here's an excerpt. The spiritual origin of costume has been forgotten in our materialistic age, and clothes are turned out in our factories without a thought for the individuality of those who will wear them. They are supposed to be practical. However, meaningful and beautiful clothes can also be very practical. The simplest dress can be made beautiful, and he also stressed that we are justified in taking pleasure in beautiful clothes. Well, I love to read about that justification in the pleasure of beautiful clothing and thinking about how something that is practical can also be beautiful. That's really the challenge of a handmade wardrobe, is thinking about communicating very clearly something about ourselves in the choices that we make about color, texture, cut, and design, and making clothing that suits our bodies and also the kinds of activities in which we engage. I've noticed recently that there's an incredible popularity of the tunic in contemporary fashion. And when I see these ads, I was recently mailed a sale notice about tunics on Anthropology. And I went to look at these quite expensive garments, and they're all incredibly simple. They are things that I could sew myself. So it has motivated me to think about making clothing and think about making just a very few things that are beautiful, practical, sturdy, and special, rather than spending a lot of money on many pieces of clothing that are, you know, mass produced, I suppose you could say. This weekend in the Sheep to Shawl class, I was able to carefully consider some of the design elements for my eventual, I guess, graduating project. And I think I have it pretty much figured out. So I will be working on a poncho design, incorporating quite a few of the natural and naturally dyed yarns that I have spun myself. And I'm really excited to start swatching and begin work on this project.
Acorns are dropping off my Jenny's house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Leaves are down like a lady, waiting for a naked man. River bends like an elbow, turning stone to sand. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Sycamore trees are blazing like a rainbow fire. Just like Linda Curtis, but out on a wire. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Thanks for listening. Music for this episode is So Wheat. Music and lyrics by Samuel St. Thomas, performed by Krista Long and Cesar Diaz. If you enjoyed today's episode, I hope you will consider liking the show's Facebook page, joining the Yarns at Yinhu group on Ravelry, or leaving a star rating or a review on iTunes. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week.
It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.